Hi Sandra. The following story is about thoughtscapes. It shows how thinking processes can take place and how we can understand them in terms of things that we can see around us, or at least how we can understand or try to understand things around us. So in that way, by understanding things around us, we can try to understand how we think. This particular story starts with a dream I had this morning, in which I was in a culture which evidently was more advanced than the kind of environment that we find on planet Earth at this moment. And in large rooms, there were a kind of grey bell shapes in the corners at the ceiling in which sound waves were produced. And the moral of the story was that the frequency to be produced needs to be half a frequency higher than the core frequency of the room itself, so that as a result it is possible to cancel the frequency in the room. As dreams come, of course, there are ways, kind of a summary of what you do not understand in terms of what you do understand. So often dreams are at the edge of our realization, and the puzzle is about trying to understand what we do not know in terms of what we do know. So that's the case in this story as well. And then we can see that the story about the half frequency above the core frequency of the room invokes many different thoughts which need to be pieced together in order to be able to understand what a dream is about. So this story is about atoms. It is about soundscapes. It is about mathemusics. It is about cell communication. It is about holograms. It is about the relationship between the wave train, the wave envelope, and the solitone. It is also the relationship between the photon jump, the electron oscillation, and the electron binding. That last mechanism I tend to call the zipper of creation, and it is the core of the alchemical process of relating solid to liquid, to gas, to plasma, all in terms of what the alchemist called the quintessence, which we would now call the quantum jump or the quantum leap. That essentially is what this whole dream starts with. The dream was had a starting point at a crucial core frequency and the need to go one half frequency up so that you can actually go down half a frequency, and that's very important for understanding how wave and wave cancellation works. And for that, it is practical to go to the de Broglie model of the atom. As many people have been told, it is possible to look at atoms as if they are little planetary systems in which you have a nucleus and around that circulating electrons. Of course, the whole model of tetrionics replaces that by a much more sophisticated, much more practical model. But let's just stay with that model of the little galaxy picture of an atom in which you can have electrons circling at different orbits. And as de Broglie pointed out, for electrons as for planets, there will be a wavelength by which these particles will circle around the core, this middle of this constellation. So one electron orbit will be having wavelength 1, the next one will be having wavelength 2, the third one out wavelength 3, and so on. But it also means that essentially the wavelengths 1, 2, and 3, and so on, are where the wave repeats upon itself, where you have a standing wave, where the wave reinforces with itself, so that there is a movement of the electron in such a way that it will retrace its same path, and the frequencies of the oscillation are synchronized within themselves. The wave has become a standing wave. If you go out half a wavelength, then the wave will cancel with itself on the next round, because on the first round it will be going up just as where it will be going down on the next wave. So netto, you will have no wave form at the wavelength plus and a half, or the wavelength plus 1 minus a half intervals. In that sense, the orbits of the electrons in atoms would simply be the resonant wave bands where the waves superimpose on each other, and the range in between is where you will have wave cancellation. So let's go from that picture to the more fundamental picture of wave coherence, which would then start with the principle of a quantum change, or essentially that is the same as a phase change, which will be the essence of phase space. Phase space, which previously would have been called the Dirac ocean, is conceived to be a level of creation where only electromagnetic particles exist. In astronomy, that would be called the Van Oort gas cloud. The mathematician Paul Dirac referred to that in a different way. At that level, you could actually include all of the subatomic particles, which in tetrionics is called the particle zoo, with all the leptons, bosons, mesons, pions, everything that exists at that level. So in tetrionics, you can then go to a more basic level and see that out of the quantum phase space, particles can arise, which are then called tetrions, and the tetrions in combination will lead to the formation of larger particles, which can aggregate to form atoms, which then can aggregate to form molecules, which then can aggregate to form matter. Tetrionics explains how this particle aggregation requires an electromagnetic field, for the simple reason that tetrions are surface charged, so that they can stick to each other, depending on how they orient it, and depending on the charge distribution within the tetrions. But as a result, particles can form, and as we know, the universe is not one cluster of tetrions as a kind of frozen solid rock. Then we can also understand that there is an electromagnetic field, a quantum field, which keeps all these particles in motion and not only brings them together but also pries them apart. Tetrionics then has two kind of electromagnetic flows which result out of that, which all have to do with the formed particles being acted upon by the environment quantum electromagnetic phase field. And then you can identify the in and outflow along or through a cluster of particles, which is then in tetrionics called a Kempf flow, or a circulation within clusters of particles, which tetrionics calls the BEM flow. It's a BEM circulation. So the BEM circulation is an internalized current of the quantum field within matter. Very often that is known as energy or the movement of heat. And the chem flow is not as well described in physics. We could call that not energy but exergy. That what goes into and out of the system. In terms of pure electromagnetic quantum field flow. In contemporary physics, specifically wave mechanics models of physics like field theory, you would then see that there is a relationship between the electromagnetic or information quantum field and shock waves that can arise at that level. And those shock waves we would call energy. When the shock wave travels along in a kind of steady motion, we would call that time, a traveling wave. And when that oscillates or reverberates within a specific environment, it produces a standing wave, which we call space. So there is a direct relationship between the quantum field or the information space, the existence of energy, the dimension of time, and the dimension of space. The relationship between those four phases of coherence has been described in alchemy. They call it fire, air, water, and earth. And in our time, we call that the plasma field, the atom field, the molecular field, and the material field, or in terms of the language used, that could always also be called the domains. There is a way to describe that kind of coherence between information, energy, time, and space, which we can then understand on the basis of a different kind of modeling, which is that of the relationship between a wave train, the wave envelope, and a soliton. Essentially, it's the wave mechanical equivalent of trains as you find them on the railway tracks. One wave is then the up and down movement of an oscillation, which will take place between wave nodes, the ends of the wave. Just like in a violin, if you tap the string of a violin, it will start to oscillate, a bit like a swing. But then going sideways within itself, which is the string oscillation, which is tied or bound at either end. So that kind of wave is then the basis of this concept of the wave train, where you will just have a sequence of these waves lined up one after the other. For example, musicians use that and using a string to make a lower tone or a higher tone on the same string by doubling, tripling, quadrupling, etc. The wave in that specific length of that string. So it is not that difficult to see that we can go from a wave to a wave train. And if there is a regularity in the relationship between the wave and the wave train, say all the waves are the same length, then you can see that there is a kind of envelope around them which keeps them together, which is literally called the wave envelope. And if the wave envelope, the wave train, and the waves have an interconnected pattern of dynamics, they stabilize each other, then that is called a soliton. The soliton is comparable to a hologram. And so at that level, we can immediately see that the relationship between the wave train, the wave envelope, and the soliton to what we see in our nervous system, in the relationship between the sensory cell, the neuron, the plexus, and the brain. The brain is a three-dimensional Gabor hologram, so that's the equivalent of the soliton. The plexus is two-dimensional. where a couple of neurons come together and interact. The retina in our eye is an example of that. So that's a place where there's a kind of filtering or coherence taking place in that system, which is the counterpart of a moiré pattern or a wave envelope. The neuron is like a wave train. It's the propagation of the wave along the length of the neuron. And then the sensory cell is where the wave is pulsed or created. And there, think also of a laser system, that the pulse in the sensory system is the equivalent to the flash in the laser. The neuron is the propagation from that pulse up to the mirror. The plexus is the reflection from one mirror to the next. And the brain is the up and down reflection between the two mirrors. And so that is where we then have an understanding that we can connect waves to a larger pattern of coherence. And from there, it is then simple to see that what we can describe at the level of the waves of light, as Einstein looked at it, we can also understand in terms of waves of sound. In fact, we can understand it in terms of any kind of waves, as superstring theory and field theory try to point out. In our body, we can see that there is a very intricate relationship between photons and phonons, which is photons as the light field, phonons is the sound field. And so within our body, we can then infer that where at the level of the atoms, there are all kind of photon processes related to the change of the state of the atoms, as described before. And that's where we then see that a photon leap creates an electron leap in the atom, can then create an electron oscillation between atoms, and then can create, lead to electron bonding in the forming of matter. So that then happens at the atomic level, and of course cells work with that to reorganize atoms, to reform molecules by which they recreate or decreate the materials of our body. The processes that occur at the atomic level evidently are also scaled up to work at the molecular level. They're also scaled up to work at the material level. So it's not surprising that we can then find a relationship between the photon field and the phonon field in what in tetralogy is called the Apollo constant. Apollo, like Lucifer, was a wave mechanics engineer. So at that level, you can then see that there's a coherence in the wave field, in the light field, which underlies the formation of the material field. And in our body, evidently, this is what cells are able to do. The first cell is able to go into that oscillation dynamic of the cell turning in on itself from the material to the molecular to the atomic to the phase level, and then comes back mirrored as two cells in the process of cell division equals cell multiplication. So at that level, we can see that division equals multiplication, so that unity is maintained between units. And this is a very important mathematical relationship of equation operating throughout the whole body. So every cell division is an equation operation, where whatever existed before is preserved in whatever exists after. As I've described elsewhere, in that process of cell division is multiplication, we also see that the cell cycle of the first cell then ends up becoming two cell cycles of the two ensuing cells. Those two cycles in the two resulting cells must balance out. That's by the law of preservation of momentum. So then we can see that the first cell cycle has in a way opened up into two cell cycles which are still connected in what we would call a Möbius loop. That again is an example of the relationship between a wave and a wave train. So all of the cells in the body form an extensive wave train pattern in which there is coherence at different levels of complexity, which is the wave envelope. All of these cycles of wave patterns and wave cycles in our body, also the organ cycles, result in the body as a whole, which is then a soliton. And actually, our body is literally a soliton. One of the well-known solitons is a smoke ring or a torus or a donut shape. And if you consider that from mouth to anus, we have this pipeline of emptiness going through the body, then you can understand that our body really is a toroidal structure. We're still trying to come back to this more deeper understanding that in our body, all of these wave phases and wave cycles are interconnected. When you understand that all of the cell communication takes place at the level of the exchange of molecules, but also of a chemical interchange, which chemistry is actually the flow of electrons through the pathways in the body. And then you can also understand that it is at the electromagnetic level, because there's a whole lot of electromagnetic activity in the body, such as measured in the brain, measured in the heart, measured in the muscles, measured elsewhere. But then you can also understand that cell communication also takes place in the light field. And that's where, of course, the pigments in the body are very important. Just to put those four levels next to each other, the physical material level is called the proteins, the chemical level of cell activity and interactivity at the level of the molecules is then called the chemistry or the physiology. Go one level up, then you see that the molecules have electric spectra so that they have an electromagnetic interaction, which is the electromagnetic field, which is that domain of the regulatory system of neurons, hormones. And one level up, you find that you're dealing with the pigments which are doing the light. So you have the relationship between proteins, enzymes, hormones, and pigments, which together are part of that system of cell communication where the wave cycles connect. And when you understand that all of these wave cycles can be interpreted like rhythms, and rhythms can be interpreted as oscillations, and oscillations in music are called notes or tones, frequencies, then you automatically have this understanding which I call music, which is also connected to music medics, that in our body the cell communication is a whole symphony of interrelated frequency patterns, which all together form not only the physiology of our body, between the feed forward and the feed back, between all of the cells, all of the organs, and between all of our bodies, and also between our bodies and humanity and the environment. But we can also see that this level of the physiology, when you look at it, the chemical level, which is also the level of the free electron flows, or when you look at it at the level of the electromagnetic interaction, which I've mentioned before, which is a full electromagnetic field in the body, then you can see that the physiology of the body is also the psychology of the body. So that the mathemusics doesn't only describe the sound patterns in the body, but also the associated electromagnetic patterns of our thought processes. So this is where we then can go from the understanding of the physiology of the body to the psychology of the body, and that we can interpret the mathemusics of our body as a soundscape in our body in which different patterns of sound exist in coherence. of soundscapes, there are very many examples. There are nice examples of mono loudspeakers. When they are organized differently, they become part of a stereo set. And the difference between mono and stereo is that there is a phase relationship between them. The difference between the sameness becomes very crucial, because it is in that way that in a stereo set, between the loudspeakers, you have the place of an invisible orchestra. Actually, homeopathy makes use of that. It's able to store information on matter in that kind of way that you can also store music on a music CD. And in our body, we can see that there is a vast use of that kind of organization of soundscapes in the body. And soundscapes around our body are perhaps less known, but very relevant to understand. Not just in the form of the stereo, but it is possible to actually use loudspeaker systems in such a way that you can create sculpt areas of sound cohesion and sound flow and sound suppression. That means that it is possible to create a kind of hologram of airwave vibrations, and airwave vibrations is what we call sound, and that these sound wave patterns actually have an architecture in space. Of course, to maintain it, you need to have loudspeakers which are able to repeat a specific kind of signal and interplay with that, in the same way as you can only see a fountain as long as the water flows. And in that sense, an orchestral composition is an example of such kind of soundscaping or sound sculpting. And if you look at the chanting of the Om in the Eastern cultures, then that Om will actually interact with the environment and reverberate within the environment, and as a result, form a soundscape pattern around the person who's chanting. If you want to elaborate that a bit, we would go up and down with the sound so that you can actually modulate different kind of patterns in that environment interacting with the human who's chanting, as is done with the Gregorian chanting. An elaboration of that is the kind of repetitive music, as is seen in, for example, the composition of Philip Glass or the minimalistic music. That is where you then have not only the up and down changes in the music, but also the vibrations and the pulsations of the music. And out of that comes then the more elaborate pattern of the soundscape as created by an orchestra. So once you understand that, then it is also possible to understand that if you record this kind of symphonic effect, then when you record that, you not only record the orchestra, but you also record the waves as they bounce to and fro, up and down, in the concert hall where the recording is being made. These kind of reverberations are very well known from, for example, the churches, where singing and chanting and music making always needs to take into account that the sound will travel from one side of the church to the other, come back and start to oscillate in that church in a holographic or near holographic pattern. And that as a result, in the church itself, likewise, a soundscape will be created. Some musicians understand that very well. For example, I once witnessed a presentation of the Hilliard example where the organ player used the main organ to shoot 3-4 notes into the church in such a way that the notes actually caught up with each other in the center in a kind of vortex movement, which was a masterful understanding of how these soundscapes can be created in those spaces. And evidently, musicians like that organ player and other musicians are often very well aware of the kind of reverberation that space has, so that they can take that into account and, if necessary, compensate for that. That is also something which has been understood in the amplifier technology and the loudspeaker industry. And so from the 1980s onward, a bit before already, more pronounced after, amplifiers have been built which can use microphones to sample how the sound goes out into the space and then comes back. This was also called the system of the dynamic loudspeakers. They take the reverberation path in the space into account, and as a result they can actively cancel for the waves coming back. This is the kind of principle that's also been used in, for example, car engines. Evidently, car engines are a primitive kind of technology. They use an explosion engine. All of biology uses internal combustion. Humans still use external combustion and explosions. So that can be a noisy affair. And some of the more expensive cars used to have a microphone in the engine, which then catches the sound as it goes out and then uses a loudspeaker to make opposite sound. So when the sound goes out, the loudspeaker goes back. When the loudspeaker goes back again, it creates an anti-wave movement, so that the sound is actually caught up locally. So that kind of sound dynamic can then be used to re-sculpt the soundscape around these engines and silence the motor noises as a result. So with this kind of understanding of soundscapes, this whole topic can be elaborated very extensively, because of course this has been used in the sonar principles. The whales navigate by this. The bats use that kind of approach to know where they are flying. And musicians take that into account, and the more they take that into account, the more they can in a way cancel or suppress or eliminate the space that they are in. Some of the more modern sophisticated loudspeaker systems have that as well. When you start them up, you actually need to train them in their environment, as a result of which they will have to go from low tones to high tones and measure the kind of frequencies that come back. That would be boring. So nowadays they often simply have the loudspeaker play music, which contains the low and the high tones and the middle tones. And then they can measure when the sound comes back and thus what kind of shape and size the room has. In a way, then they subtract that from the sound picture that they project. And evidently, you can really 4D soundscape, think in sound pictures, no longer in just frequencies coming by, but actually a space in which sound has a shape. And as a result, it is then possible also to have the loudspeakers turn the quality of the room into that of a bath, a large hallway, a concert hall, open space, and so on. So think of those kind of technologies of editing the soundscapes, because once you understand that this is what takes place in the body, in parallel to what we see taking place in sound engineering around us, then from there we can go on into the notion of thoughtscapes. As I mentioned before, the physiology of the body, which is also in math and music's interpretable as the field of the soundscape of the body in its dynamic. And as I just pointed out, its capacity to compensate for limitations, and actually also to do the inverse, to make cellular patterns within that environment, so to compartmentalize flows of sound, to create an internalized sound structure. The physiology is balanced by the psychology. The psychology is where you can then have the electromagnetic field or the electromagnetic part of that wave field as a dynamic in itself. Bjørn Nordenstrøm and all the electrophysiologists have looked into that. So then you can see that there is a relationship between the physiology and the psychology. But as they operate in different realms, they in a way make different use of the sounding board, or let's call it the motherboard of the body, which is the platform for the cell communication. So the sound waves will have their specific frequencies and their specific propagational speed, while the electromagnetic part uses that same space in a different way and operates at faster speed. So then we can see that the anatomy of the body is pulsed, and think of laser pulsing in this context, by the physiology, which in a way pushes the swing of the movement of the body. But the soundscape in the body is a reverberation of the electromagnetic field in the body. Think also of the way that the lightning charge discharges around the earth, creates a reverberation around the earth when lightning charge discharge propagates at the speed of light around the earth, because of the size of the earth. This results in what is called the Schumann frequency, which is the resonant frequency of these lightning discharges in the earth as a kind of Stradivarius resonator. So likewise, we have that interaction between the electromagnetic charge discharges in the body and the physiology of our body, the soundscape of our body. And so then we can see that between the light field, the electromagnetic field, the sound field, and the flow field, the chemical field of the physiology, there is a connected separation. It is like four gears in a car. The light field, which operates at the edge of the quantum space, will be the defining edge of how we process information in formation in and around our body. Actually, it's the interface between us and the rest of the universe. That connects to the electromagnetic field, which operates at the atomic level, not only in our body, but also in our environment throughout the universe as well. And that electromagnetic field then connects to the free electron flow in our body, the currents of electricity or electricity, as has been described by Bjørn Nordenstrøm and all those electrophysiologists, that there are actually currents flowing through our blood vessels, lymph vessels, arteries, veins, in the nervous ducts, in the collagen tissues, all of the other materials. All of the materials in our body have specific and precise functions in that flow of the electron circulation in the body, which people often look at as if it is chemistry. But if you understand the connectedness at a deeper level, where the photon leap, the electron oscillation, electron bonding are all interconnected, then it is more practical to call the chemical space at the level of the free electron flow and all the levels that it operates at. So that's the level from the electron bonding in the material to the flow of electrons in the materials, but also the electron exchanges between the materials and the conversion of electric activity to magnetic activity at the fringe of the electromagnetic field, which is also the information field. So in that sense, we then have the sound field in the body and the electromagnetic field in the body and the light field in the body all interacting. And that then is the domain of our thoughtscapes. So there is a lot more to tell about that, but in order to be able to really grasp what's going on, you need to actually understand how the intercellular processes, as described by Herbert von Fröhlich, connect to those of the levels and principles described by Cyril Smith of the neuronal and hormonal or meridian and homeopathic flows of the electromagnetic field in the body, which have connection to what has been described by James Oshman of the electric field input and output in from the environment into the body, into the organs, into the cells. And that also connects to the information processes and the information processing as described by Hans von Rekkevik, who basically describes the relation between the vibrational field of the environment as it impinges on the surface of the body and then is internalized into the body and then acts, of course, on the individual cells. So that is all part of the thoughtscape that we are in. And coming back to the dream that I had, where in this advanced society, in these large rooms, there are these kind of beehive or clock-like loudspeaker systems at the top, where at the top they can, at the core of that vortexing device of sound, they are able to tune the vibrations of the sound field so that they can cancel the field, not only at the level of the positioning of the walls in that environment, but they can also account for the people and the objects that are in that space, and they can also in a sense nullify the space as a whole. So that means that it is possible by that precise and precision technology to nullify the environment that the people are in, and that means that there is no sense of space while the people interact in that space. And the impressive part of that kind of understanding is that it allows a switch from, say, the bodily experience, which is always associated with the confinement of the space around us and the interaction with the earth, to the mental level, where we have actually the physiology of our interactions with our environment and how that gives us inputs, and where we can give our own outputs, and by that we can navigate. Compare that to the bats navigating in their space. Likewise, we navigate in our social space. But if there is then that sense of understanding that neither the material environment matters, because that can be cancelled out by the soundscape that has been created, nor the interactional distances specifically matter, because that too can be compensated by accounting for the positions of the individuals in that space, then what is left is the open space in which the soul can develop, so that people can actually from themselves relate to everything as a whole, and they can understand, they can relate to everybody in that space and to everything in that space. So that means that by the cancellation or the integration of their awareness to the much larger awareness beyond the confines of the space that they're in and beyond the positions where the other people and the objects are in, people can actually shift from a body awareness, which is what classical physics referred to, or a mind awareness, the process level that relativistic theory refers to the quantum level where our soul operates. And of course, once people operate from that level, they can immediately connect up to the soul of other people and can find their soulmate sort of straight away, which was also part of the dream that I was observing this morning. And once you can do that, you can also understand that that applies not only to the people you meet, but for the whole reality that you're in, which means that you can operate at the spirit level. So what I've tried to do is to give an unraveling of a dream, specifically starting with one core component of that dream, in which the dream itself was about an environment with lots of people in large buildings, with the technology where they used a kind of bell-shaped loudspeaker system, in which the dream was very explicit to say, well, this is where you need to go half a frequency above the core frequency. So that was the message of that dream. And evidently, that dream then requires decoding. And the story I just told is just one level of the decoding of that dream. Because evidently you then need to understand that I was able to look at the connectedness of everything that I've just been describing, because I have had glimpses of different parts of the story and different parts of my life. So I can only connect up the dots in the puzzle because I know about the soundscape, because I have been working on the matter music, and because I studied about the waves and the wave chains and the wave envelopes and the solitons, and I learned about the holograms and how that connects to the lasing principle, and I looked into the way that operates in our body. So as a result, that notion of the dream, which simply said you need to have one half frequency higher, I could understand what it meant, because I had already looked at the Broglie series in the atoms of the places where the waves overlap and the waves cancel, then overlap again, cancel again, overlap again, cancel again, in what is then called the different orbits in the little galaxy model of the atoms. But out of that then comes the larger understanding that with all of that, what I've just told, then it is possible to calculate for any space what the core frequency is. Actually, in mathematics, there is this technology where you do matrix sweeping and then can find the eigenvector, the determinant, the core, and actually establish, say, the patterns of coherence or cohesion or resonance within a matrix. And as the whole universe is composed of vibrations, and then whatever we know about matrix analysis, we can interpret in terms of wave organization. So that is where we can then have this understanding of the core of the matrix. And that evidently in this dream was pulled in, that I already knew that, so I can then understand what is meant by the frequency needs to be one half above the core frequency, and the core frequency is then, let's call it, the pattern of the frequencies which in essence portray the quality of that space as a whole. So once you have that, then if you can go one frequency, one half frequency above that, then you of course can go back down that half frequency, and that is all you need to be able to operate in the space between wave amplification or wave cancellation. So in that half wavelength or that half frequency, that is the kind of instrument in which you can then do half a quantum flip, which means that you can polarize or cross polarize, and you can go from one phase to the other, which in our reality we would call crossing a boundary or not, because the boundary is actually a place where you have wave reflection. If you do not have wave reflection, then you have a field. So in that sense, if you are looking at the wave orbit, that is where the wave reflects back on itself, and between the orbit is where the waves do not reflect back on themselves, they cancel out, and that is where we then call it a field. So in that sense, you could call one orbit a boundary in the atom, the next orbit would be the next boundary in the atom, and those boundaries would actually build the quality of the resonator that that atom operates by. And then between those boundaries, you have this open space of wave cancellation, which is then the essence of the field in that system. So once you understand that, if you can vary half a frequency, you can actually move the boundary half a wavelength in or out, which means that you can cancel the waves or can turn the fields into boundaries and the other way around. And that is what elsewhere I've described the Gold principle, that you can generate, operate, and destroy a boundary. And of course, that is only meaningful if you can integrate that so that you can put it coherent, in a coherent pattern in the environment, so that it's actually integrate, generate, operate, destroy, or the I Gold principle. And that is then the principle by which you can, in a unified vibrational field, position and reposition boundaries, and as a result are able to create edges or remove edges so that you can expand your awareness or focus your awareness. So that is the essence of what that dream told me. And now going to the third level of that dream, what I've been doing is showing how the thought process work, thought processes work. The trigger point was a thought, and as a result of that, within the knowledge system that I have from the things that I learned, the people that I met, I have pieces of knowledge which are lying there like apples in a fruit shop or instruments in a tool shed. And what I then do is I see how the one thought connects up to the other thoughts. It is principle pattern recognition. So I look for thoughts which pull out elements of the initial thought that I started with. And then I select thoughts which tell the same story from a different perspective. Of course, as I study wave field engineering science, and as I work with the principle of alchemy, and as I invented the four-dimensional dynamic logic, I have a kind of Swiss pocket knife by which I can see the relationship between principles at different levels of aggregation. As I mentioned, the zipper of creation is part of that. The photon leap, electron oscillation, electron bonding. But it's also the principle of system theory, which is actually the equivalent of the description of alchemy, that we have a relation between states, processes, transformation, and information. So with those kind of tools, it is impossible to more quickly select the kind of ideas that unfold that bindo, that seed crystal thought, which was presented by that dream, and as a result see that indeed it is possible to use a half frequency modulation to retune a whole space, because what you then do is you retune the frequencies in that field. But whereas I described that before in the terms of soundscapes, I later connected that to thoughtscapes, now we can actually apply that understanding and see that this dream actually describes not only how you can attune the frequencies and the soundscape in a room, but that equally well describes how we modulate and orchestrate the thoughtscapes in our body and in our thinking processes. And so that is the core of the story that I then pulled out of this dream.